The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
You can't always get a clean you can feel good about inside and out unless you're using Bubble Genius bath and body products. See, Bubble Genius is a woman-owned small business proudly creating our vegan-friendly products in America and supporting other U.S. businesses by buying our ingredients and supplies from them as often as possible. Plus, you'll be hard-pressed to find packaging as recyclable as ours. Visit BubbleGenius.com and check out our cause-related items, too, like our global warming soap and a lot more. We donate our proceeds for those items to worthy causes, like organizations combating climate change and mountaintop removal mining. Good stuff like that. We also send our products to the troops overseas through our Buy a Soldier a Shower campaign. Because the least we can do is keep them smiling and smelling great, right? So visit BubbleGenius.com and feel good and clean. Bubble Genius, doing our part to make the world a better place, one bathtub at a time. That's BubbleGenius.com.
Recorded live in the USA and covering the whole wide world, this is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
Right on!
With Bob Seska and Chez Pazienza.
I'm here with Congressman Ron Paul, who was the 2008 presidential candidate. So tell me, who are you wearing?
Well, I don't even know, because it's pretty conventional, and I'm pretty, in that sense, pretty ordinary. But the message is not ordinary.
Do you want some champagne?
Oh, I don't care for any, no.
There's no ice bucket, but I know a good place to put it. Yeah, you were great in that. Have you done a lot of television before?
Oh, well, off and on, throughout the years. This last year, a tremendous amount.
Sure.
Did a lot of them.
Do you want some strawberries or maybe some oysters?
I'm okay.
I'm going to light some candles, that's okay. It really loosens you up. Has anyone ever told you you look like Enrique Iglesias?
Mm-mm.
Of course not. You're much cuter. I love music. I'm dancing. I used to be a dancer.
Meine Häuser ist gefallen.
All right, get out of here.
What?
All right.
What's going on?
This is ended. That guy's queerer than the blazes. He took his clothes off. Let's get going. He's queer as crazy. He put a hit on me. He took his clothes off.
Who listens to radio? That go where you go medium called radio. That's with you every night through the long commuter fight. And in the morning with your toast and mama lady-o.
The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
It is Wednesday, June 19th, 2013, and this is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show. I'm Bob, that's Chez. Brought to you every week by BubbleGenius.com. The best damn bath and body products in the whole wide world. We're also brought to you by the Bowen Law Group and attorney Charles J. Bowen. Charles, easily the best attorney I've ever dealt with. Fast, smart, he knows how to communicate with his clients, which is important. You don't want to get handed off to some paralegal and feel like no one cares about you. The Bowen Group covers commercial, banking, manufacturing, employment, personal injury, and medical malpractice law. Large firm experience, small firm attention, elite firm ability. TheBowenLawGroup.com. Hit the link right on the podcast there on the blog. Also brought to you by Dead Star Twilight Chez Pazienza's huge, revealing, turbulent memoir.
I actually read it recently.
Oh, good.
I've never read it from start to finish.
Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, actually. I mean, it bothers me because I don't know how I did it. And I'm terrified I'll never be able to do that again. I'm looking at it now like that can't possibly be me. Like, it turned out okay.
Yeah, writing a book was easily the hardest thing I've ever done as a professional project.
It's insane to go back and look at it and say, how the hell did I come up with that? How did I turn a phrase? How did I build it like that?
Yeah.
It's like it's written by a different person. I can't imagine. Genuinely, I can't imagine myself. I remember writing. I remember sitting down every single day, you know, in New York City and cranking that thing out when I wasn't working for CNN. But, yeah, I read it now and I'm like, all right, you know, there are things that, you know, I'm like any writer, I'm like, well, that kind of sucks. But overall, I'm like, wow, you know what? That turned out all right, and I don't know how the hell I did it.
Yeah, you have to go into like a trance-like state in order to to do it. There's some sort of Zen process that's required to write a book. You just have to do it. I think you have to force yourself to do it. It's like an act of sheer will. You have to...
Yeah, it is.
Just force yourself to start typing, and then once you start typing, you just lapse into a trance, and then you just keep going. I think that's how it works. There's no great secret to writing a book. It's just forcing yourself to do it and then just letting yourself do it.
Yeah, but I'd never read it all the way through. Well, I'd always read it in pieces because it's told in three separate timelines, so I just kind of went chapter to chapter and was like, okay, well, that works or that flows into this. But I never, from start to finish, I never actually sat back and read it. And, yeah, you know, I'm happy with it. I am. I mean, I'm not even like George Lucas, like – even the stuff that I'm not thrilled with, I'm like, all right, you know what? That's good enough. I don't feel the need to change it.
Oh, you're not going to go back in and put Jar Jar or Greedo
exactly,
firing
yeah.
First.
I'm going to add new special effects. I mean, I already edited it once for the sort of 10th anniversary of 9/11, and that's when I made it available on deusexmalcontent.com for like whatever you want to pay for it.
Yeah, there you go.
And I went in and added sort of the epilogue, which is sort of a where are they now and what have I learned in the past 10 years and that kind of crap. So I did clean it up just a touch a while back, but that's it. It's like I'm done. I'm good.
So it's like the three timelines is you dealing with the aftermath of 9/11, you in rehab, and then you getting married? Is that what it is? Your marriage?
I'm
trying to recall the three separate timelines.
No, it's basically the time it's being addicted. It's the time leading up to rehab. It's the time in rehab that month.
Yeah.
And then it's the time out of it covering 9/11, which happened right after I got out of rehab.
Right, right. And then you sort of bounce back and forth between those three chapters.
Yeah, the three of them kind of intertwine and kind of a ring, if that makes any sense.
I mean, you don't have to know Chez in order to really be entertained and intrigued by this book. It's just it's a sort of a universal story.
I hope so.
With a lot of insight into that period of time, too.
True.
So anyway, what are we on week two now of the NSA story? I guess
NSA gate,
NSA gate. We're at the point now where the ridiculousness, the reaction, the overreaction to the NSA story is really looking embarrassing.
Actually, you know what? I want to say something because this is the piece that I just wrote for Banter. It'll be published probably as soon as we're done with this.
Sure.
Something I want to take a second to bow to Michael Hastings.
Oh, you know, yeah.
Brilliant, brilliant journalist, hardcore journalist, you know, fearless, all the things a good journalist should be. And while I disagreed with him in his willingness to align himself with like the Glenn Greenwalds and David Sirotas of the world, the fact is that if a guy like Michael Hastings had done this story, it wouldn't be this story.
Yeah,
it wouldn't be this mess. It wouldn't be – there would be no holes in it. It would be airtight because Hastings was a real journalist. And that's what I keep saying. That's what the difference is between a Greenwald, a Sirota, somebody who's got a bias and will do anything to put that bias forward and who really doesn't – I mean quite frankly, when you're a journalist who's put his life on the line, literally his life on the line, that, you know, that gives you a dedication to the truth like nothing else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and as an professional journalist, Hastings would have sealed this thing up absolutely tight. And any questions that we had about Snowden stories, he would have answered them ahead of time.
That's right.
He would have had Snowden answer them.
That's right. That's right. Go back and read the Stanley McChrystal profile in Rolling Stone.
You can tell that he's got obviously Hastings has his not his biases, but he has a ferocious sort of. A drive to a certain political bent. There's nothing really wrong with that. But when it comes to being a journalist, you know, when it comes to sealing up everything and getting the story right, he did that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we talked about that concerning Matt Taibbi. He's the same kind of guy. He's got an opinion. He's got a very strong opinion, but he's a reporter first and foremost. I mean, being a journalist is at the top of the list. Being a an incendiary flamethrower
and a commentator. And I'm the first one to say it, by the way. You know, I call myself a journalist now, but I don't go out and cover stories anymore. Mm-hmm. I don't, and I know that. I sit and I write opinion. You, quite frankly, you've been doing more by at least looking around online and finding, you know, I've been writing sort of trying to write kind of think pieces, whatever. I hate that term. It's true. But, you know, you've been sort of gathering facts. But, I mean, once you get out in the field and you really are gathering facts, that's where, you know, that's your baptism of fire. And this kid absolutely did that. And I say kid because, you know, he died at 33, but he was working for Newsweek when he was 25 years old. You know, he was working in Iraq when he was 25 years old. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was an incredibly gifted reporter. So, and he knew how to get a story, and he knew how to be a journalist.
That's right. And you'll never hear Glenn Greenwald, kind of fess up to the idea that he's not really a reporter, that he's never really done this before. He's never taken a scoop and developed it into a story. And
exactly.
You just need that. I mean, we've talked about this in terms of television hosts and cable news hosts and having broadcasting background as sort of the primary driver of their career. Well, mm-hmm. Greenwald's driver of his career has always been just, you know, writing these screed-like dissertations that, quite honestly, I was talking to a colleague who will remain nameless to protect his anonymity and his reputation. But he was saying, you know, I got to force myself to read Greenwald's stuff. And you can't, it's hard to read because he's not a writer in the traditional sense. He sort of prepares legal briefs. That's what he used to do. And so everything he writes is sort of in the form of
it's this didactic, yeah. You know, you're being lectured.
Yeah, that's right. But so, I mean, but if Snowden had gone to someone like Hastings or had gone to someone like Taibbi, I mean, you could argue that, well, Bill Gelman got part of the story and he's a Pulitzer Prize winner.
Right.
But Gelman was compromised because he rushed his story to press before it was ready. So even if you win a Pulitzer Prize, it's a whole new ball game if you're trying to get something to the internet as rapidly as possible.
That is actually very unfortunate, and that is the way things work now. It's like that in you want to believe that it's not like that in print, that it's only like that in broadcasting, because in broadcasting the bottom line is whoever gets on first wins. Mm-hmm. That's all that matters.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, there are local stations around the country. There are networks that believe that literally believe the thing that you've said many times about, you know, just get it out there and you can retract later.
That's right.
They truly believe that. I know for a fact. I know a lot of local stations in very big markets whose attitude is, you know what, just get it on the air, report what we know, and if it changes and we have to retract, then so be it.
It's a massive loophole in the system that really should be closed by any of these real legitimate digital publications. Yeah. You can't do that anymore. That's wrong, because by the time you make those revisions, the original story has blasted around the globe several times. You know,
yeah,
see,
exactly.
We witnessed it a couple of times. In fact, just the last couple of days. I mean, Rick Perlstein posted a thing about Greenwald, and like it went out all over the place, and he had almost immediately like deleted it after posting it, because I guess he needed to make some revision or there was some hold up in the process of posting it. But right. It went around everywhere, and everyone's like, well, this link doesn't work. What? It says access denied. What's going on here? That's an example of once you hit post and you have any sort of audience whatsoever, that is just it's like a wildfire. Just boom, it just erupts. And before you even have a chance to finish clicking post, 2,000 people have already seen it.
Right.
Yeah. You know, on Twitter or Facebook or wherever, or on the blog itself, what have you. And it also happened with Charles Pierce today. He posted something, too, that had no text in it. But everyone's like, why? Are you seeing anything in this post? I don't see anything.
Yeah.
It's because in the instant that he posted it.
And so the sad thing is that this turns us into a mess, too. It does. It makes all of us worse. It genuinely does. Because gone are the days when, you know, I had a conversation with Mary Beth Williams from Salon the other day, who, you know, seriously kind of, you know, she and I had a long conversation about writing. And you know, she said, gone are the days when, even if you were, you know, if you're a reporter, it's one thing. But gone are the days when, as an opinion person especially, you're allowed to write, you know, unless you're Friedman or Brooks, you know, the very few people who still have those ivory tower jobs, you're expected to crank out how many pieces a week? How many pieces do we crank out a week for Banter? And that's nowhere near what the people at Salon are expected to write.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think we write half what they write a week, what their weekly workload is supposed to be.
Yeah, I mean, but how long are they writing? I mean, what's the typical length of a Salon piece? I mean, Is Joan Walsh writing more than just one column-length thing a day? Or is she writing smaller things?
Joan Walsh, I think, is Walsh doesn't write as much as somebody like, you know, like Alex Perrine or Mary Beth or whatever. I don't know what they're, you know, Alex Eitzwald or I mean, but obviously, I mean, a lot of the stuff that they write are just little knickknacks here and there. But for the most part, I mean, like Mary Beth does write not huge columns, but certainly pretty meaty columns. And they, I mean, she writes a ton of them. And I don't know how the hell she does it. You know, I mean, I don't know how any of them do it.
You just, it's
because
about,
I want to shoot myself in the face like 9 times out of 10.
It's just like writing a book. You either get into a groove or you will yourself into doing it. You just do it. You have no choice. You just start typing and something comes out eventually.
All right.
But, I mean, you got to watch all – I mean, it's so appropriate. It's so appropriate to everything that's going on. Watch all The President's Men. Just take this weekend. Go right. If it's on Netflix, look at it on Netflix. If you can find a copy and watch it. Go to the library and get a copy, for God's sake. And watch all The President's Men and see how they broke this story, Woodward and Bernstein. And notice the process of vetting their information and going through their editor and discussing each detail and how they effed up and rushed something to press too quickly and it blew up in their faces.
Right.
And that's a key section of that movie in the book.
Yeah.
But regardless, I mean, you know, it really illustrates mistakes that are made in the process of journalism, even print journalism that was vetted by Bill Bradley and really scrutinized for accuracy and for sources, reliable sources, quotes, etc. And then just that painstaking process of nailing the story, just getting it exactly right and what's involved in doing that. We see none of that now. None of it.
There's very little that's painstaking. And the sad thing is that even if there is that process, if that goes into it, then there's always the fear. You know, there are still going to be people who tear it down. They just are, because Everybody's their own media king now.
Well, that's right. But I mean, that's why you've got to make sure that all the gaps are covered. Absolutely have to make sure that you have 100% nailed it. And we're going to talk about a fantastic example of maybe the biggest digital journalism blunder I've ever seen, at least in recent memory. We're going to talk about that after a brief break. Back after this.
Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
Yeah, we're back.
Still one of the greatest live shows I've ever seen. Living Color at 9:30 in D.C.
They're just a bunch of badasses. I mean, these guys.
I think it was like 88, 89. Yeah. Just, oh my God. They just destroyed the place.
Absolutely. I never had a chance to see them live, but is one of my favorite songs, favorite albums of all time right here. So all of this conversation about the press and rushing things too quickly and getting it absolutely wrong leads us into what was really the news at the start of our kind of show week, which it kind of occurred after we had finished the show and, you know, sort of in all of this stuff coming down. CNET, Declan McCullough. Released this.
That was disastrous. You know what? Can anybody even mildly associated with Ron Paul please just stop writing?
Yeah.
And it turned out. Stop having anything to do with journalism, online, print, broadcast, whatever.
Yeah, this guy's like the senior political correspondent for CNET. CNET, right? And so he releases this story on CNET. I think it was Saturday. And it might have been Friday, but I'm fairly certain it was Saturday. But regardless. He releases a story on CNET that the NSA has admitted to listening to phone calls without a warrant. Like, holy crap. And you talk about something spreading like wildfire, circulating around the globe multiple times.
That was
to
all
everybody.
Over the place. No time.
Everyone was retweeting that headline. Everyone. I mean, I saw people who I respect, who I like, whose work I have followed for years, retweeting that and saying, well, I guess Snowden was right. I guess no. I mean, that was actually. I'm not going to name a name here because I don't want to embarrass him. The tweet went out. I guess Snowden is right with the headline NSA admits, and the big link. So everyone was looking at CNET, And I went to CNET, looked at the piece, and I said, well, I mean, I'll be honest. I'll say, uh-oh. Well, okay, let's see what this is all about. Because, you know, you look at a headline like that, and your first instinct is to go, well, of course no one's going to get it really this wrong, so it must have some ring of truth to it. Okay.
Right.
You know? I mean...
Yeah, you know, Jesus... I think one of the things that gets to me is remember the days when you used to feel like, all right, look, if it is in print, at least you can, you know, print by a legitimate source, you can at least somewhat trust it. Remember that? Wasn't that nice?
Yeah, yeah. Because you at least felt that they've gone through a process. Again, they've gone through a process where they've pitched a story to their editor. They've had that story vetted. The sources have been checked. The facts have been checked. I mean, even if you know what? To their credit. Huffington Post, every time I post something, one of the editors at Huffington Post looks at every single one of my links to make sure that what I'm saying...
Yeah, I like that they do that too. And it's, you know, it's interesting. They didn't used to do that.
No.
That before AOL, they would just take crap as is. I've always marveled. Do you ever do this? No. You don't, you haven't written about the kind of awful, you know, crap that I have. But I go back once in a while, go through my archive. Like, you know, I think I did it like a while ago just to remind myself that I used to be a somewhat decent writer. But I go back and like I look at the crap like when I first started in 2008 that wouldn't in a million years it past muster now.
Yeah.
Stuart would write me back in literally 30 seconds and say, go yourself. There's no way in hell we will print this.
I mean, I remember, I mean, it's hard for me to look back at my back catalog of Huffington Post posts, especially during the real, like, mid-Bush years, like 2005, 2006.
Right.
I just, like, off the rails. And it's kind of embarrassing to see it. I mean, it's not like I'm not necessarily backpedaling on my opinions in those pieces. I'm just backpedaling on my style. I just like, oh my
God. Yeah, no, your style, you've gotten far, 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 far better as a writer. I mean, I'm, you know, and I'm not saying that I didn't like your stuff before. I linked to you constantly when I was just doing the blog.
Yeah.
But I liked, what piece? Oh, I know what it was. The Michelle Bachmann piece you wrote recently. That was one of those times when I'm like, that son of a bitch. God, I'm like, I wish I'd written that. Like, that was so beautifully said from start to finish. All the little, you know, turns of phrases you put in. I mean, everything. I'm like, that's freaking brilliant.
I have no recollection of writing anything about
exactly. See, that's what we're all that way.
But
we're cows joylessly being milked.
This is all to say that even the Huffington Post looks at every blog post, and these are unpaid bloggers.
Right.
And they look at all of the links to make sure that at least we've got some connection to the truth or reality. Right. But that didn't happen with CNET because the CNET story was entirely, entirely bungled. I mean, it was some of the sloppiest writing and reporting I've ever seen. It was all based on a Judiciary Committee hearing in which Robert Mueller, the FBI director, appeared and gave testimony to the Judiciary Committee, and then was questioned by various congressmen, as the process always goes. And one of those congressmen was Gerald Nadler from New York, Democrat, who began to ask him about the process of whether or not NSA analysts can listen to the content of phone calls without a warrant. And Mueller said, no, they can't do that. They need to get a warrant. There's a process that they have to go through in order to listen to a phone call, and it's complicated, which is why there was a lot of back and forth and confusion between the two guys, between Nadler and Mueller not understanding one. You know, there's a lot of terms being thrown around: metadata, content, listening. It was a very confusing exchange. Suffice to say, Nadler eventually said, well, what you just said, Mr. Director, was the opposite of what we heard in a hearing the other day. That's what Nadler said, and that line became the NSA admits to listening to phone calls without a warrant.
Yeah, and I mean, you go back and you read the actual transcript, or you watch it, and it's I don't know. I genuinely don't know where he got that. I mean, I without any prompting to go in that direction. I would have watched that, and that is not even in a million years would that have been the takeaway from that bizarre back and forth conversation.
Yes, because it was entirely vague. I mean, we don't even know what that secret meeting was all about. We don't know who was in that meeting. Was it the NSA director who said it? Was it someone else? In the meeting, did they watch the Snowden video? In the meeting, in which Snowden says, I, as an analyst, have the authorities to go in and blah, 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 and to listen to any call and to even wiretap the president.
He's so full of crap, by the way. He's a hacker kid. He's a hacker IT guy, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I bet my life. I mean, look, you know, seriously, I don't know for sure, but that's one of those things that just the more I hear about it, I'm starting to get to the point where I'm like, I bet my life on that crap.
I have a bias when it comes to Edward Snowden, and I'll readily admit this, because I know at least two guys who are exactly like Edward Snowden, who have it's the same character profile, super brilliant, very well spoken, an IT genius. I mean, a guy helped me move my blog from one server to another host last fall, and then there was the hacking situation. He helped me with that, too. Supreme, 100% brilliant hacker, but he's a Alex Jones conspiracy theorist. He's a Ron Paul supporter. He's like, you know, it's like the entire Edward Snowden profile. But this guy could do just about anything. I mean, he was reverse engineering cell phones in order to add extra time to your cell phone plan instead of every time you make a call, it subtracts time.
Right.
He was adding time onto this other guy's cell phone. I mean, it was absolutely remarkable. And this is when I hear Edward Snowden talk, and when I hear about especially that Q&A that he did with Greenwald, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But I'm just reading that stuff and I'm going, that's that guy. That's it. This is exactly that same guy. And it's a culture. It's a mindset. It's not just a coincidence that there are guys like this. It's an entire culture of people where they're. You know, they know about this stuff. They're both, at the same time, Joy said it best this week. They're both intrigued and repelled by this technology. And I have the sense that what Snowden was doing, and this is just a theory. I have no specific facts to back it up. Needless to say, the facts haven't been made known in a very thorough way. And that's a topic for a separate discussion. But here's the thing. I believe Snowden may have hacked into the system when he didn't necessarily have the authority to do so as a means of weeding out the holes in the system. Because that's what a lot of hackers do. They'll hack
they feel very they feel like they're doing everyone a favor.
It's like a public service. Yeah.
Yeah, they're they're what's his name? They're the Thomas Gabriel character from Live Free or Die Hard.
That's right.
The Tim Oliphant character.
I hacked into your email just to show you that your password is weak.
Right.
You know. I mean that happens all the time. And that's what that may have been what Snowden was doing. We'll talk about that a little more.
That's the less dangerous equivalent of the guy who brings the gun through airport security just to show them that he can.
That's right. Hey, back after this. BubbleGenius.com. What can I say about BubbleGenius.com? The best bath and body products, funny stuff, vegan, women-owned, independent, liberal. If you're not buying your stuff at BubbleGenius.com, all of your soapy bath and body products, you're making a big mistake. And it was paining me this week because Paula from Bubble Genius got into a big fight with John Cole from Balloon Juice.
Oh, really?
And I like, of course, Paula is one of my best friends. And I like John Cole. He and I have sort of a relationship between the blogs. So it was hard. It was hard to watch that. I was like, oh, no, come on, guys, stop.
It happens.
Yeah, it happens sometimes. Hey, here's the latest word from BubbleGenius.com.
You can't always get a clean you can feel good about inside and out unless you're using Bubble Genius bath and body products. See, Bubble Genius is a woman-owned small business proudly creating our vegan-friendly products in America and supporting other U.S. businesses by buying our ingredients and supplies from them as often as possible. Plus, you'll be hard-pressed to find packaging as recyclable as ours. Visit BubbleGenius.com and check out our cause-related items, too, like our global warming soap and a lot more. We donate our proceeds for those items to worthy causes, like organizations combating climate change and mountaintop removal mining. Good stuff like that. We also send our products to the troops overseas through our Buy a Soldier a Shower campaign. Because the least we can do is keep them smiling and smelling great, right? So visit BubbleGenius.com and feel good and clean. Bubble Genius, doing our part to make the world a better place, one bathtub at a time. That's BubbleGenius.com.
Shove Bob and Chez into your pants and haul them around with you wherever you go. Subscribe to the Bob and Chez Show in the podcast section on iTunes.
Hey, when you go to check out after buying all of your stuff at BubbleGenius.com, you can type in Bob and Chez as your promo code. It's coupon code. You get 15% off when you type that in. And it also tells Bubble Genius that we sent you. And that's, by the way, that's exclusive just for listeners of the show. So if you, it's only good for you because you have decided to subscribe to the show. So thank you. Thank you for doing that. All right. So what happened here this week was, again, I think what we're witnessing is kind of a slow motion train wreck. I hate to use that overly used phrase, but it might be what's going on here because, I mean, the CNET story aside, which was just an atrocity. Because, by the way, that guy, Declan McCullough, ended up doing yet another post about the NSA the next day. Or it was 2 days.
He doesn't learn his lesson, and they, of course, don't force him to learn one.
Well, yeah. I mean, the case was he released this thing. NSA admits to listening to phone calls without warrants, right? And then the next day, the headline had totally changed. But after it was too late. After it was too late. Changed to something else. Story remained mostly the same, of course, but he changed the headline. That was CNET's takeaway. I can't have that headline. Leave the content alone, though.
Right.
Awful. Awful. And, you know, you sit here and you look at this stuff go past your computer screen, and you just want to tear your hair out. Because what it is doing, it is embarrassing the entire movement. Maybe I'll get to a little bit about that more later, but regardless, what's happening is we're seeing kind of a meltdown on behalf of Greenwald and Snowden, not helping themselves at all. So there were two things that occurred. One was this leak of the G20 surveillance.
Yeah, exactly.
Which,
wow, what a shock. We spy on other countries.
Other countries. Who, yeah. Some yeah, of them
again,
are
again,
allies.
This is not someone who believes that there is NSA. This is not a vegetarian. This is a vegan. This is not somebody who believes that who wants you to eat better for not eat animals for your health. This is somebody who thinks that eating animals is wrong all the way around, the way around, and wants you to stop. Period. This is somebody who believes that you know, the NSA, its very reason for existence is wrong.
That's right. It's an absolutism that is, that's infuriating. Because now, I mean, they've looped in a huge, huge following on this. I mean, and mostly liberals. You name the names. Some of the top shelf voices on the progressive new media side. And it's what's happening now is we're into this realm where, we're already on board the Snowden bandwagon. So, he's released G20 surveillance information. Oh, good Lord. Well, we're on the bandwagon anyway. You know, so now it becomes not just a matter of we've got to stop any sort of surveillance that might loop in an American phone number. But now we've got to stop the process of United States spying on other nations.
Yeah, we're supposed to be shocked. We're supposed to be shocked that the NSA does what the NSA and the CIA do what they are supposed supposed to do. They're there. And there are people who want us these no secrets types who believe that, you know what, if we could just get rid of all secrets, everything in the world would become utopian. You know, the only problem is it's like an arms race. The one nation that has all of its secrets revealed is suddenly very, very, very vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you think everybody else is going to stop doing it, boy, what do you have your head up your ass?
Yeah, really. every nation is doing this. Every industrialized nation is spying on friends, foes, in between. It's just a process of keeping your eyes open. You know, someone asked me on Twitter, said, well, why are we doing this? What, name one reason why this is important for us to do. And my answer was, it prevents wars.
Yeah, exactly.
Because the more you know, the fewer misunderstandings there will be.
Right. I think I said this last week. Where was the at some point, like I think it was last year or something, that documents got leaked. I think it was to WikiLeaks. And it was this big thing about how Hillary Clinton had lied to the Chinese ambassador or something.
Oh, right.
Had sort of BS'd the Chinese ambassador. And of course, the WikiLeaks, you know, the WikiLeaks can do no wrong, people were like, oh my God, see, we're lying to the Chinese. And it's like, yeah. You know what that's called? Diplomacy.
Right.
That's diplomacy. Yeah. Diplomacy is bullshit. It's lying.
That's right.
That's what we do. That's what our diplomats do. They glad hand, and behind their backs, they lie their asses off.
Well, what it's become now, and we've seen little hints of this over the last several years, but when you use a certain word, it becomes link bait. And it becomes instantly evil. So you throw in the word drone, you throw in the word surveillance, you throw in the word Obama, you throw in the word, let's see, what are some of the other words, Guantanamo. You throw in any of these words, and you could actually just say the word, and everyone would be like, oh, impeach. Oh, right. Worse than Bush. Oh, my God, what's happening to our country? Not even looking at what exactly is being said or what's being done. To read a story beyond just the headline and the subheadline, to read it just beyond what it says on like the Twitter abbreviated version of it.
Right. It's that's the other problem. The other problem is, you know, TLDR, mm-hmm. You know, too long, didn't read. Are all of our, you know, the larger picture, what I've written about so many times is that all of our attention spans have been reduced to nothing.
They've been
reduced to 140 characters. We're not willing to look any further than that. And the problem is that, you know, having a headline that grabs you is ancient. That goes back to the beginning of publishing. But now, more than ever, that's a lot of times that's all there is. It doesn't even matter what comes after.
Right.
All that matters is having that headline that gets the clicks, that, you know, that mm-hmm. grabs people.
Link bait.
Link bait. And that's all people care about. That's the only reason stories get published.
We got to take one last break. We'll come back, talk more after this.
The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show with Bob Seska and Chez Pazienza.
I know I'm a nerd.
No.
Huh. Great
kidding?
Song.
Wait, no.
It's kind of a nerd song, though. It is.
No,
it really
it's a great
is.
Song.
Iron Man. Yeah. So there were two examples of precisely what you're talking about. You know, the CNET article, which you were talking about in the previous segment. The information, the Q&A between Mueller and Nadler was buried way down in the bottom third of this article after a lot of other stuff that he threw in. There was Declan's headline, which was totally, totally wrong in every way. Then there was his lead, which was also totally wrong in every way. And then there was about 700 words of nonsense, backstory. And then finally, the quote, all right? And the quote was completely inaccurate. Or he just kind of, the quote was, he accurately quoted Nadler and Mueller, but he misinterpreted it. By the time you get there, who's reading down that far? Really, casual reader? You're just barely following this. It's a Saturday. You're doing family stuff, weekend stuff. You don't read down that far. So, of course, you take the headline at face value. Why not CNET? So you blast that all around.
Right.
Here's another thing. There was a big headline went around today about Robert Mueller, FBI director, and the domestic use of drones. Now this got blasted around the internet. Fortunately, overshadowed by Paula Deen, which we're going to talk about in the after party.
Dude, I'm telling you, it's just the best stuff, the best thing ever.
It really
is. The greatest thing ever on Twitter. This is what I keep telling people. This is what I keep telling people, that as long as your intentions are pure, you can make a joke about anything.
Right. So I'm seeing this headline getting fired around Twitter. FBI director acknowledges domestic use of surveillance drones. Said agency is exploring guidelines. Yeah, oh, my God.
Drones.
Drones.
With a Z.
Okay. Look at this story. Again, on the surface, oh, my God, surveillance drones. Surveillance and drones in the same headline. It's like, I'm surprised the internet didn't explode because of that. All they would need to include in that headline is masturbating fetus, and the internet would literally melt.
Masturbating fetus drones. Oh, my God, dude, if I could see a masturbating fetus outside of, like, my window looking at me, that would rule.
You
I mean,
see,
first,
like,
of all, I'm expecting it anyway, because I still have yet to have, like, the flashbacks from all the acid I did when I was, like, 21, 22. So I would be surprised if at some point I actually do see a masturbating fetus.
Are they, you think they're going to weaponize fetuses, masturbating fetuses, put like little propellers on them? Or
well,
like
sure.
A,
I mean, Steve Stockman says that they should have guns.
That's right. Have guns, and then you put the, like a jetpack. You mount a jetpack on them. You'll never notice. And it can be a very small jetpack, because we're talking about a fetus. So the masturbating fetus on the jetpack has got like a sophisticated camera. And then buzzes up to your window and masturbates and then photographs you naked. you can call it the Peeping Tom. You can call it Operation Peeping Tom.
That would sell. That'd be like bait. With a name like that? Oof.
You don't even really have to do it. You just have to make that up on Twitter. And then, man, you've got a hit. Big viral success. But so this story about surveillance drones.
Seriously, by the way, Paula's best dishes, number one trending topic on Twitter right
now. Ah, love it. That's
number one.
Just to give you a hint, we're going to talk about this in more depth on the after party. But there's a news story out from the National Enquirer. So that's a whole other layer.
We're saying this because by the time this show hits air, you're going to have known about it. But go ahead.
Yeah, right. But there's a story in the National Enquirer having to do with Paula Deen allegedly wanting to hire black people to play slaves at a wedding.
And using
the N-word.
Using the word nigger, which I'm sorry, I don't like saying the N-word. I'm not saying it to subjugate or dehumanize. I'm just saying the word.
And so now there's a hashtag going around Twitter, Paula's best recipes, is it? Paula's best dishes.
Paula's best dishes.
Paula's best dishes. Very, very funny. We're going to talk about that.
It's just Twitter has come out to do what it does best in a way I promise you it's never done before. This is the most – my productivity has been zero all day. It's so brilliant.
But in the meantime, I saw someone again who I otherwise respect and consider a friend firing this headline around.
Uh-oh.
And, you know, it's like the FBI. Oh, the FBI. You know, the FBI is using surveillance inside the United States. How crazy is that? How could the FBI ever do surveillance inside the United States? Let's fire all of them.
That's why the FBI exists.
That's the only thing the FBI does.
The FBI's job is to surveil inside the United States. The CIA works outside. If the CIA were, well, that's not, you know, nothing is out of the question anymore. But yeah.
Ask the mafia whether or not the FBI does domestic surveillance, for God's sake.
Exactly.
We have satellites, an entire fleet of satellites orbiting the world or in some sort of geosynchronous orbit, and that are used primarily for spying and surveillance.
Yeah, the FBI's sole reason for existence is to spy on, you know, is crime fighting in the United States.
Have you ever seen a movie? Have you watched Goodfellas, True Romance? There is surveillance going on.
Right, and movies, by the way, movies made after the 70s.
Yes.
Because back in the 70s, you know, when we were truly even more paranoid than we are now, you know, that was when you had the conversation and that kind of thing.
The danger of drones, to me, is always the ones that are armed with Hellfire missiles. And right. if those drones are buzzing around, you know, your neighborhood, I'd be a little concerned about that. But if there's a drone that's been tasked to surveil, you know, like look, remember the end of Goodfellas when Henry Hill's being, you know, he's like, he's all skitzed out on cocaine. Yeah, he's running back and forth. He's making the sauce. He's getting the guns. The silencers don't fit. So he's got to get new silencers, or he's driving all around and the helicopter's chasing him. The helicopter is surveilling him. So what's the difference if it's a helicopter or a drone? That's my question for you. Otherwise, you know, the only difference being that the pilot is on the ground and not actually in the helicopter. There's no difference. The FBI does surveillance. That's what they do. That's what they have always done. And certainly you can have a conversation about any anecdotal evidence of overreach or abuse of power on a case-by-case basis. But that's always going to happen, too. And oftentimes that gets weeded out, especially in court. Especially in court. When, you know, a prosecutor gets evidence in a way that's unconstitutional or breaks the law or that is inadmissible in court.
Yep.
And so that all that crap gets checked at some point. But, I mean, this is another example where you put surveillance and drones in something and boom, instant viral hit.
Right.
And then everyone starts rending their garments and pulling their hair out and screaming.
Right, because everybody's scared of the concept of drones, which, you know, look, you know, there are things to be nervous about when it comes to drones. Of course, you know, of course, they can go places other surveillance can't. Mm-hmm. They can fly around without, you know, having to worry about, you know, crashing, you know, putting the lives of pilots in danger, of course, you know, and the, you know, and having played Black Ops 2, I know there's always the possibility that, you know, somebody takes over the entire program and we turn all the drones against us. So, you know, we'll be dead soon.
Right.
Well, telling you, man, it's coming. It's coming. I play Black Ops 2. I know.
This is just what's happening now. And it's just making, it's embarrassing to watch. I mean, flop sweat embarrassing. See,
it's just people being afraid of the technology.
I mean, people going around saying, oh my God, Edward Snowden's this hero who exposed all of this surveillance that's been going on. You know what? No. He exposed one thing, PowerPoint slide about Prism, and, well, you know what, the extent of Verizon's cooperation. But you know what? This is all stuff that, at least in a general sense, we've known already. That doesn't make it less important. It just doesn't make it the end-all, be-all of American life right now and news reporting and outrage.
And, you know, I mean, I know. We all, everybody hates falling back on the, you know, as the left always says, the surveillance and security state and, you know, using terrorism and that kind of thing. Everybody hates falling back on that. But I'll tell you something. The first time another 9/11 happens, I'm not even saying that, you know, will it have been worth it or whatever. I'm not saying, you know, well, what if that – but I just want to watch the looks on Americans' faces and the immediate change of tune, because we want it all. We do. We want absolute security and safety, and we want zero governmental intrusion. We want everything because we are –
Well, the irony is that there's already much greater government intrusion into our lives, into our privacy.
There is, absolutely. But, I mean, look at us. We even – you know, I mean, my God, like you and I, we, you know, we go through TSA security. My issue with TSA security is that it's done badly, not that it's done. It really isn't. But, yeah, I mean, you know, even that I gripe about. And it's funny. It's like, well, you know what, God, the littlest things – you know, God forbid I'm inconvenienced a little bit. Mm-hmm. And it really does, because it's, you know, it does bother me, because, yeah, at some point, you know, just – I'm sorry, statistically, we're going to get hit again. You know, it may be something much less than 9/11. It may be something bigger than 9/11, which is terrifying to think about.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But, yeah, you know what? I'm sorry. I'm willing to give a little bit. I am, because I'm sorry. Only a utopian idiot believes that you can have every single thing.
Yeah,
you can have absolute safety and security, and you can have zero – governmental intrusion.
Well, see, I mean, I've written a lot about the hyping of the terrorist threat, and I stand by that. I agree completely. The terrorist threat is way hyped, way overblown. Your chances of being killed by a terrorist, especially on an airplane, it's like 1 in 10 million, something like that. You have a better chance of winning the lottery or being struck by lightning a dozen times.
Winning the lottery while being struck by lightning.
Yeah. But at the same time, you know, I must be an Obama bot for what I'm about to say. But I kind of actually agree with the president on this. There's got to be a balance you draw between balancing, you know, American values, civil liberties, and, you know, making sure we're not idiots about national security either.
Yeah, exactly.
I think, you know what? I don't mean to speak for her, but I assure you, Rachel Maddow feels the same way. Rachel Maddow does. All right? So it's not... And she'd hardly be considered an Obama bot.
Yeah. I mean, only a nihilist.
That's right.
Only an anarchist, a nihilist would believe that we should have that under no circumstances should the government do anything to protect us. Mm-hmm. That's insane. Yep. That is absolutely insane.
And what I don't understand where this line is now. I mean, what is the next step? What level of surveillance is applicable and permissible? Okay, so for example, Greenwald this week said, well, you know what, we could have caught the stock market bomber. Well, maybe we could have caught him with a little less surveillance and that would have been acceptable. But, and I hate to play this sort of space-time continuum game, but if we had had that level of surveillance and not this current level of surveillance, I assure you Greenwald still would have been bitching about that level of surveillance.
Yeah.
So you wonder what level of surveillance is okay? What level of?
I genuinely don't think any is. I mean that. I don't think that any level.
Yeah. I mean, and this we had this conversation with regards to drones a couple of months ago. What level of the use of drones is permissible? Well, even the ACLU says drones are okay in certain circumstances. Even and Greenwald agreed with them because he linked to the article.
Right. You know what's interesting? In some ways, it's two sides of the oddly enough, the left, of course, we've talked about this before, that the spectrum isn't really flat. It eventually comes around.
Yeah.
But the NRA people and the far left seem to think the same way when it comes to this. You know what? I don't want you – the left is thinking, I don't want you to ever trample on my rights, no matter what. No surveillance, no nothing. And you know what? If people have to die once in a while so that I have that right, so be it. The NRA thinks, you know what, I have a right to own an arsenal if I want. And you know what, if somebody goes in and shoots up a school once in a while, tough, that's the price of liberty.
You know, I'm just seeing here on Twitter, a headline just came down. James O'Keefe says he was harassed by federal agents.
Of course he was.
James O'Keefe climbing aboard the Edward Snowden bandwagon. But you know what, or the Edward Snowden gravy train, I should say. He's trying to paint himself as a martyr, right? But there is, you know what, it's entirely possible that Edward Snowden could end up being a smarter, better-spoken James O'Keefe on the left. You know, James O'Keefe emerged out of nowhere with hard evidence of systemic wrongdoing at Acorn, Planned Parenthood, and NPR.
And it was bull.
And it turned out to be nothing. It turned out to be a fraud, a hoax.
I'm telling you, man. Call me wishy-washy, but I really am. My social politics tend to lean to the left, but I have no issue being somewhat centrist on most issues, or at least moderate.
Well, the left is losing me right now. My politics aren't changing, but the methods that are being employed right now are absolutely deplorable and embarrassing. I just don't like the knee jerkery that's happening on the left, and it's driving me nuts. The ignorant conflation of, as soon as you question Edward Snowden, you're instantly an apologist for the surveillance state. You're instantly an Obama bot surveillance state supporter and advocate. And you're just miming White House talking points. Now, I'm asking legitimate questions because you know what? You fancy yourself Greenwald or whoever else. You fancy yourself being intellectually honest because you're challenging the Obama administration the same way you challenge the Bush administration. But you know what? I asked questions during the Bush years, and I'm asking questions now. I asked questions of Judith Miller, and I'm asking questions of Glenn Greenwald. And we should. Now, the Bush administration based their entire case for invading Iraq on the WMD word of a guy named Curveball. Remember Ahmed Chalabi?
Oh, Chalabi, of course.
You know, and then I'm sure Colin Powell will tell you right now, I should have asked more questions.
Yep.
You know, but I mean, we went to war based on the word of one guy, one defector named, codenamed Curveball, who was part of Chalabi's little cabal, exiles. We gotta ask a serious question. You know what? It could turn out that Edward Snowden is entirely on the level, and I'll retract everything I've said. I'll disagree with his methods and motives, but I'll hand it to him. His facts turned out to be true. Okay. Now let's talk. But until that happens, I'm going to keep asking questions. And I don't want this entire thing to implode just when we're beginning to make some progress. Moving this around, turning around 8 years of right-wing domination. Don't be stupid, people. Yep. All right, after party tomorrow, noon Eastern. Thursday, noon Eastern. Make sure to subscribe because we got a lot more coming up on that show. Take care, everybody. Bye.